It's time for Open Journal's Community Spotlight, where listeners like you produce your own program. This airtime is a free service offered to those interested in sharing their knowledge, talent, and passions. This is also a space to audition new programming. Opinions expressed in Open Journal may not reflect the views of the Pacifica Foundation, its staff, board, or volunteers. Information shared on Open Journal should not take the place of appropriate professional consultation. Now it's time for Open Journal's Community Spotlight here on KPFT Houston.
On November 9th and 10th of 1938, the Nazis staged vicious pogroms, state-sanctioned riots against the Jewish community of Germany. And these came to be known as Kristallnacht, Night of the Broken Glass, a reference to the untold number of broken windows of synagogues, cemeteries, and Jewish-owned stores all vandalized, plundered during the pogroms. Good morning. And welcome to Storytime on KPFT's Open Journal. I'm your host, Dr. Hank Rubicek, Professor of Communication Studies at the University of Houston downtown. KPFT's untiring commitment to our community takes Storytime down a different road this morning, not in format, but in theme, as we remember the 73rd anniversary of Kristallnacht. Often referred to as the event that sparked the Holocaust, its stories and lessons dot the landscape for all humanity. To help us contemplate that landscape is Jackie Bartha, who graduated from Western Washington University, where she studied storytelling, while earning her degree in Holocaust studies. She later received a Master's of Library Science from North Texas State, with emphasis in youth services, and a graduate certificate in storytelling. Houston librarian, staff storyteller at Temple Emmanuel, and member of the Houston Storytellers Guild. Jackie, good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome. I'm so glad you're here. You know, your first story is entitled, They Think They've Won. And in a few words, this is a very interesting story, Jackie. You told me about it a little bit. But in a few words, what should we be listening for when you share this story with us?
The subtlety and the quietness of hope.
The subtlety and quietness of hope.
But it never gives up.
Sounds intriguing. Looking forward to it. Please share it with us.
It was an icy cold night in a shtetl, a little village in Poland. It was a beautiful night. It was cold and clear and crisp. The stars were like diamonds in the sky. It was a peaceful night of perfection in the heavens. But on the earth, there was anything but peace. The streets ran red with the blood of Jews. There were Nazis reveling. They were so thrilled. They were so happy as they sang and marched. They knew they had won. They knew that they had killed the last Jew in that village. As they walked past a stout Polish woman who was carrying a beautiful baby girl in her arms, they would stop to comment. The girl was indeed lovely, no more than a 18 months, 2 years. Her head was covered with blonde curls. Her eyes were blue and clear. Her complexion was milky white, with red cheeks made even redder by the cold of the night. Oh, almost every man stopped and said what a beauty she would grow to be, how she would break so many German hearts. And then they walked on, to go to the bars, to go to the clubs, to drink. The Polish woman said nothing. She just jostled the baby in her arms. And finally, when they were gone, she whispered into that baby's ear for her alone, "They think they've won. They think they've won. They think they killed the last Jew. But they don't know about you. And from you will come fine Jewish sons and fine Jewish daughters. Because those who seek to destroy the Jews, they never win. Thank God they never win."
That was beautiful. That was beautiful. The impression in that particular story, it's something that reminds me of Baba Yar, Ravine, that that was used to slaughter as many Jewish children as possible in order to make it very clear that the Jewish God wouldn't be there to save them. And it was a message that was given very poignantly on Kol Nidre, which was the night before Yom Kippur, the holiest night of the year. I think about that when you share that story. You know, everybody has to realize that, that the case study of the Holocaust is simply that it's a case study. Hate hasn't gone away. And we have to remember, that celebrating, if you want to use that word, Kristallnacht, really has very little to do with it being a Jewish thing, a Polish thing, a Catholic thing. It's a human thing. We have to remember that all of humanity is somehow damaged when we forget the power of being non-passive. We have to somehow be able to render help and assistance. We have to be able to remember who we are, saying kind words to each other. A number of simple things. Stop clapping when your friend drops a tray in the cafeteria at school. Get up and help them, for God's sakes, right? There are all sorts of things that we can do to really render help. But that really is a beautiful, beautiful story about hope, Jackie. And I want to get back to that in just a moment because, you know, the idea of hope is something that is very difficult to operationalize. In just about 30 seconds or so, when you think about hope, what do you do daily? What do you do personally daily to really gain a sense of hope? Is that a fair question? Is that a tough one?
Oh, moderately difficult, yes. I'll have to think about that.
A spiritual person? Are you a religious person?
Yes, a little of both. I belong to Emmanuel, Congregation Emmanuel, and I just find that my Judaism supports me. It carries me. I go to Emmanuel not because I should, but because there's always something there, always something that I hear that enriches my life and does give me hope to keep going.
And that does give you hope, yeah. What are the sorts of things that you feel when you leave a service, for example? You feel more optimistic?
Yes, and I try and make sure that it's not too much beating the breast and thinking about the things that I've done wrong, although there is always a lot of that. Amazingly, when I was studying the Holocaust and everybody was telling me, how do you do that? It's overwhelming. It's too depressing. There was still hope there. There was hope in studying the righteous Gentiles, the people who hid people at their lives. There was a great deal of hope in the tenacity of the people who survived, the people who were in the camps and did what they had to do, kept their spirituality alive.
Thank you. Thank you, Jackie. You are listening to Remembering Kristallnacht on Storytime on KPFT's Open Journal with storyteller Jackie Bartha and me, your host, Hank Rubicek. You know, along with Hitler denying Jesse Owens victory at the 1936 Olympics in Berlin, Kristallnacht really did introduce the Nazis' ideology to the free world. Before those two events, the world really didn't know what was happening. And Jackie, from the stories that you're going to be sharing with us, you already shared one, but you'll be sharing another wonderful one with us in just a moment. But from your stories, what is it that we should be hearing from you about this terrible time in history? What are these stories telling us?
I think, unfortunately, there is still hate. There was a line in a song that said, everybody needs someone to look down on. And unfortunately, that need takes many guises. Anything from the dirty look to the glib cut down to doing what you can politically to take away people's rights. I think that remembering the Holocaust, remembering the victims, we also remember what we need to do to keep this from ever happening again.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, on November 9th, we had the 22nd anniversary of the destruction of the Berlin Wall. I like to say destruction because I want to make a punctuation mark about it was destroyed. We dropped the Berlin Wall. And, you know, that was very significant, too. And sometimes that particular commemoration and Kristallnacht are thought of in the same paragraph because we know that walls, whether they be literal or figurative, really doesn't solve problems. And we know that sometimes thinking about Kristallnacht serves as great anecdotes for narrow-mindedness and prejudice.
Well, when I was preparing for this, I thought back, I was taken back to when I did my internship. I was at the Washington State Holocaust Education and Resource Center. In 2006, almost a year after I finished my internship, there was a shooting at the Jewish Federation next door. They shared an entryway. If the shooter had gone to the left, he would have gone to the Holocaust Center. Instead, he just happened to choose the right. He shot five women. He killed a sixth woman. Mm. One of the women that he killed was pregnant. And I had met all of them. And he did it simply because he was filled with hate. He didn't approve of Judaism, didn't approve of Israel, and this was how he acted out.
And these are all women that you knew.
Oh, yes. I had met during my internship.
And these people made a significant impact on you during that internship. They were educators, they were friends, they were mentors.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Oh, definitely.
And when you think of them and you think about them being murdered and their image just unfolds in your mind, that has to be unbelievably painful.
Oh, yes.
What do people like that take away from you other than just the person? What do they take away from you?
Belief. They believe in the world, belief in people, belief that, I'm afraid I don't agree with the quote from Anne Frank that people are basically good. Sometimes I think about a little Irish couplet instead. There is a devil, there is no doubt, but is he trying to get in us or is he trying to get out?
Oh my goodness. Say that again.
There is a devil, there is no doubt, but is he trying to get in us or is he trying to get out?
That's incredible. Where does that come from?
Just an Irish phrase that I picked up, and I have to admit I used it in more than one of my papers. I think Dr. Daniel Larner got tired of hearing about it because I did include it. Sometimes it's very hard to keep your beliefs when you see things like that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the Holocaust was hate incarnate. I think we know that, and hate has not gone away, and genocide takes place almost constantly in the world. These atrocities will continue until we learn not to hate. We have to start using tolerance as a verb. We have to start doing things. We have to start recognizing what people need to do in order to stop hate. I'm a docent at the Holocaust Museum, as you know, and I think I've shared this with listeners before, but when I do a tour with middle school kids, they all have their little name tags on, and of course I look at them and I say, Billy, if I'm your boss, and I tell you that the only way to get Tommy's job is to push him down the stairs and break his legs. Right? Well, Billy is ridiculous enough to listen to me, so he pushes Tommy down the stairs, he breaks his legs, and as promised, I give him his job. And of course, now he's under arrest, and I tell him, Billy, now you're under arrest, because that's an aggravated assault. So if a police officer asks you, Billy, why in the world did you push Tommy down the stairs? Many middle school kids, frankly, most of them will say, well, because my boss told me to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I make it very clear to them that you don't listen to your boss. As a matter of fact, you don't listen to any adult who tells you to do really stupid things. You know, when I was growing up, when you were growing up, we were told always respect elders. Well, we can respect them, but do we really have to listen to them? Sometimes they're just plain stupid. Isn't that a possibility? I mean, don't you know anybody who falls under that category? So I make it very clear to kids that if you're told that, don't do that. Don't do that. Don't listen to somebody who tells you to push somebody down the stairs, to hurt someone. You have to have a sense of ownership. The way I relate that is to talk about the Nuremberg trials, when the Nazi war criminals were asked, well, why is it that you killed 11.5 million people? Their response was, it was war. I was simply told to do it. And thanks to a concept called metaphysical jurisprudence, the notion, the law of right and wrong, we know that that didn't work. Most of them were still executed, and for very good reason. So we have to realize that, yeah, hate hasn't gone away, but we also have to realize sometimes that our ability to take ownership, to take responsibility for how we feel and how we think, and to do things in order to promote tolerance, again, as a verb, is really, I think, extremely critical.
Well, the quirky people, the people who are slow to jump on bandwagons or don't jump on them at all, the people who are going to go more with their own conscience, what they think is right, what their lights tell them, and I'm one of them, are often suspect. people don't really quite know how to handle us. But we also don't shove people in ovens.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And we're going to get to your next story in just a moment, Jackie. I'm looking forward to it. But right now, we're going to hear from Laura and about traffic.
You're listening to Pacifica Radio, KPFT Houston. The time is 9:45, and here's a quick update. There is a two-vehicle accident on Beltway 8, eastbound at Imperial Valley Drive. And there's heavy traffic on 45 Gulf Freeway northbound from Wayside to Scott. The average speed there is 25 and travel time about 6 minutes. And slow also on 59 Southwest Freeway northbound from Newcastle to Hazard. The average speed there is 33, travel time almost 5 minutes. The current temperature is 73 degrees. Skies are overcast. Humidity is 60%. And today will be partly cloudy with a 20% chance of showers. Today's high will be around 83 degrees and low tonight 68 degrees. Air quality is in the good range. Please stay tuned after story time for 420 Drug War News, followed by Undercurrents at 10 o'clock and then Wide Open Spaces at 11 o'clock. And now back to story time with Hank Rubicek and his guest, Jackie Bartha.
Thank you, Laura. Jackie, Bone of My Bone blends truth with miracle. That's a pretty spectacular story. Share it with us, please.
Well, one of the things that I love about this story is that there are so many versions of it. You will find it in many books. You will find many people telling different aspects, different versions of it. So I have kind of compiled and done my own thing with it as well. More than anything else, Leah wanted children. She loved children. She would look at women passing in the streets who were pregnant. She would go to the brises at her synagogue. She would go to the bar mitzvahs and whisper the mazel tov, all the time thinking to herself how she would have looked and dressed if she were pregnant, what she would have named her baby, how she would have celebrated that bar mitzvah. She pictured herself calling her sister and getting ideas and input. But there would be no children. The Nazi doctors had seen to that. And she couldn't phone her sister. The Nazi doctors, the guards, they had seen to that. There was no more family for her. Oh, she talked to her husband about it. She had met him at a displaced person camp after the war. She had told him from the very beginning that there could be no children. The tears streamed down her face when she had done it, crossing the place where her dimples, which were very seldom seen because she very seldom ever smiled, where they were. You know, the dimples were funny. Her grandmother had had them, her mother had had them, she had them, her sister had them, her sister's children had them. Her sister had had two children. They were put in a convent somewhere to hide. She had no idea where they were. She couldn't even begin to hunt for them. Oh, how she longed for children. We could adopt, her husband said it over and over again, and her answer was always the same. I don't want just anyone's children. I want bone of my bone and flesh of my flesh. People just don't understand that. Now, when he had proposed and he had heard the news about her sterility, he said he didn't care. But 5 years later, a trip from Europe to America, across America, the start of a thriving business, a business that should have been inherited by his sons, she wondered. But she would not adopt. Bone of my bone, flesh of my flesh, or nothing. But then came the telegram. The Jewish Federation was asking them, would they possibly, could they open their home? It was so gracious. It was such a lovely home. They were a loving couple. Could they take in two orphan children? They were living in a convent in Poland, but they were Jewish. It seemed right that they be raised by Jews. Bone of my bone, flesh of my flesh, I will not take them. But Leah, think about the people that helped us, her husband implored. Take them for just a little while. Just until they can find something else. Finally, she agreed. And she, waited as the children were sent from Poland to New York, then from New York to Houston. Reluctantly, she went to the airport to pick them up. They were so sweet, really. There was something about the little girl's face that almost reminded her of her sister. And the dimples, oh, they were adorable. She took them home, tiny, almost empty suitcases beside them. The little boy, younger than his thoughtful sister, pointed to the picture on her piano. Well, two pictures, one of her parents and one of her sister on her wedding day. "Why do you have a picture of my mommy on your piano?" "Oh, well, surely he was just confused." But they went into the rooms, and she began helping them unpack. And that was when she saw it. It was the identical picture. It was her sister in the veil on the wedding day.
Oh, my gosh.
And the little girl looked at her and said, "My mommy hid that in the suitcase, sewed it in before we went to the convent. That's my mommy." And she looked. She looked at that face, now truly seeing the similarity. She looked at the dimples. She looked at the smile. And she had finally found blood of her blood, bone of her bone, and flesh of her flesh.
My gosh. What an amazing story, Jackie. Thank you so much. Remembering Kristallnacht, Night of the Broken Glass, on KPFT's Storytime with Jackie Bartha, and I am your host, Hank Rubicek. You know, let's lighten up a little bit and talk a little bit about this wonderful thing that we call storytelling. Learning about the magic in telling and listening to stories happens at the Houston Storytellers Guild Story Swap, held the third Thursday of every month at 6:30 p.m. at Brazos Bookstore. And that's a 2421 Bissonnette. And check out our website, HoustonStorytellers.org, for fabulous events, including Telebration on Saturday, November 19th at 6 o'clock at the Black Lab. In fact, Jackie, you're going to be one of the tellers.
Yes, right? I'm so excited about that.
Tell us what story you'll be telling us then.
Well, this is going to be a funny one. At least I hope it's funny.
Well, you're a funny lady. People don't know that, but you really are. You're a funny lady.
Well,
yeah,
thank
you're
you.
Pretty funny.
This is about a very disgruntled matchmaker who describes the time that a man negotiated his own marriage and paid the unheard of dowry, because he pays the girl's dowry for her, of four cows. It's called the four-cow wife.
You're kidding. Wow. Mm-hmm. The four-cow wife.
And usually a goat would do.
And he negotiates his own marriage.
He negotiates for the dowry that is exorbitantly high for, I will let you in on this, the rudest, meanest, ugliest girl in the whole village.
Yeah.
It's my twin sister in Poland.
That sounds great. And again, that's Telebration at the Black Lab this coming Saturday at 6 o'clock.
Yes.
Have a bite to eat and join us, and it'll be a lot of fun. It'll be a lot of fun. Thank you, Jackie.
Thank you.
And negotiating his own marriage. Doesn't it happen on Match.com? Don't people do that then?
I don't know if they offer you cows anymore.
Yeah, I don't know. They offer something. I don't know. Yeah, absolutely. And on the 25th, I wanted to tell all the listeners out there, on the 25th, we're going to be having Maxine Lennon, who is a wonderful Irish storyteller, and she'll be making it very clear that leprechauns are not nice people. I'll never buy another box of Lucky Charms in my life, ever, ever, ever. Jackie, what do you want listeners to know about the lessons of the stories this morning? I know that before I asked you about the stories per se, but let's make it a little bit more generic. What about the lessons of the stories? Hate hasn't gone away.
Hate has not gone away.
Yeah.
Never will. I'm sorry, I just don't think it ever will.
Mm-hmm.
But the last thing in Pandora's box, the thing she held to her heart, the thing that sunk into her heart, was hope. I had a best friend who used to always say, hope is the last thing to go, if it ever indeed goes.
Wow.
And I think these stories were like that.
Yeah. They were so beautiful. You know, the Holocaust claimed more than 11.5 million lives, including 6 million Jews and 1.5 million children under the age of 14. I mean, that's 30 Astrodomes filled with 50,000 children in each, if they were all lined up next to each other. A community that's passive and compliant towards the citizens sets a dangerous stage, one ripe for shining the lights on hatred. Thank you, Jackie, so very, very much for helping us to remember Kristallnacht, again, Night of the Broken Glass. And to everyone out there, thank you so much for listening. Have a very safe and a very happy, happy work week. And remember, it is never too late to live happily ever after. Thank you.
Been listening to Open Journal, KPFT's experiment in community-inspired radio. Since 1970, KPFT has been a unique source on the Houston airwaves.